Tonight we're going to look at two particular people in the scriptures and some of the things that happened to them. It's all in keeping with our subject of life, death and resurrection. And what we've been doing the last few weeks is looking at individual passages that for whatever reason we hadn't covered in the earlier parts of the series. So we're going to look at two people tonight and some of what happened to them. And the first one we're going to look at is Enoch. And the second one we're going to look at is Jonah. So let's go to Genesis chapter 5 and we'll spend some time thinking about Enoch. Alright, now just to put some suggestions in your mind here about where we're going. A couple of weeks ago we looked at Elijah. And you remember the story of Elijah in 2 Kings 2, you needn't look at it now. Whereas Elijah was taken away in a whirlwind. He wasn't taken away in a chariot of fire. He was taken away in a whirlwind. Remember, a chariot of fire just would have burnt him to cinders. But he was taken away, and it says he was taken into heaven. And I did suggest to you, and I hope you believed me, that the heaven in that instance was the sky. It's the same word that's used a number of times for the sky. And that indeed what took place with Elijah was that he was taken away. His ministry in that northern kingdom was finished for then. He was taken away, and then he appeared some 10 to 15 years later, we're not exactly sure of the time, in the southern kingdom, and he writes a letter to the king of the south, the southern kingdom, Jehoram. And you can read about that in 2 Chronicles 21. So essentially, when it says that Elijah was taken away into heaven, that wasn't the end of it. And it certainly was not implied that he lived on forever and ever and ever, and he didn't ever die. And I think what we're going to find here with Enoch is something very similar. Let's read a few of the passages that are relevant first up, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it. Genesis chapter 5, we don't know a lot about Enoch. We really don't know a lot about Enoch. But what we do read, in Genesis 5, and I think it's in verse 21. Well, we'll pick it up from 18, because this will give us everything we know about him. This is a genealogy, a list of begats. And it's, when Jared had lived 162 years, he became the father of Enoch. And after he became the father of Enoch, Jared lived, and so on and so on and so on. Verse 21. When Enoch had lived 65 years, he became the father of Methuselah. And after he became the father of Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years and had other sons and daughters. Altogether, Enoch lived 365 years. Enoch walked with God, then he was no more, because God took him away. And that's about all we find out about Enoch in Genesis. It's not a lot. And of course, the inference there that is often brought out by people is that they will suggest that he was taken straight to heaven, and that's where he is today. He's living with God in heaven. He never died. And I just want to point out a few bits and pieces here. Firstly, I want you to notice in verse 23, oh, of course, let's just remind you too of another verse that we looked at in a few studies, is that the Lord in John 3 is speaking to Nicodemus. Do you know the verse I'm going to mention? 3 verse 13. What's the phrase? No man has ascended into heaven. No man has ascended into heaven. So the Lord was speaking probably in round figures about 3,000 years after Enoch was, whatever happened to Enoch. And he says, no man has ascended to heaven, and he says something to the effect of, except the Son of Man who came from there. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. So the Lord would speak of himself, and if Enoch was in heaven, he would have known. The Lord would have known, because he was, you know, he came from there. But he says no man has ascended to heaven. And we also noted that about David too. In Acts 2, Peter, on the day of Pentecost, talks about David, how David has not ascended into heaven. Elijah went up to heaven into the sky, but he came back down again and commenced his ministry in a different place. And Enoch, well, if Enoch did go to heaven and stayed there, well then, firstly, the Lord didn't say, and it contradicts what the Lord says, and he would be the only person in the history of mankind who did it, and I don't think he did. Let's have a look at verse 23. We read, altogether, Enoch lived 365 years. And then it says, Enoch walked with God, then he was no more, because God took him away. Notice it doesn't say that he continued to walk with God after he was taken away. We just, really, there's a lot we don't know about what happened to Enoch. We don't know really what happened to him. I'm just going to suggest a few things that I think we can establish anyway. And also, in verse 23, we read, Enoch lived 365 years. It doesn't say that he continued to live forever and ever, and that's it, or he's living with God now. It doesn't say anything like that. In the few words that we are told, we read that Enoch lived 365 years, he walked with God, and then he was no more because God took him away. I have to confess here, I don't really know exactly how God took him away. What may have happened to Enoch may have been exactly what happened to Elijah. Perhaps Enoch was facing some danger and the Lord just said, no, you shouldn't be there anymore, remove you from that and put him somewhere else. I don't know. What I do think I can establish, though, is that he died. And we read here, again, did you notice in verse 24, it says, Enoch walked with God, then he was no more. Now, we're going to read something fairly conclusive in Hebrews in 11 in a moment, but I want you to go to Job chapter 7. We're probably finished with that passage. If you think we're going to, well, you could probably put a bookmark in there in case we come back to it. Probably should put a bookmark in Genesis 5. But Job chapter 7. What we've just read is that Enoch walked with God, then he was no more. And I want to look at this phrase, he was no more, in a couple of spots. One is in Job chapter 7. And you know that Job was afflicted. He was tested, I suppose, in a lot of ways, but he was afflicted. And especially for the bulk of the book, he was pretty miserable. He was really miserable. And he several times suggests, oh, I just wish I'd never been born. I wish I had never known life. That's the context. And here he is really expressing his anguish to the Lord. And he says here in verse 21, why do you not pardon my offences and forgive my sins? For I will soon lie down in the dust. For you will search for me, but I will be no more. Now I hope you remember something of the poetic, some of the poetic approaches where you have these two lines very often. They rhyme with each other in thought, not in sound, but in thought. And he talks about here, the second last line, for I will soon lie down in the dust. He's basically saying, well, I'm this close to death, soon I'm going to die. And that is complemented by the next line, you will search for me, but I will be no more. And what did we read of Enoch? It was said of Enoch that he walked with God, but he was no more. Enoch walked with God, then he was no more. And I'm suggesting to you there that there is at least one little hint that in some way Enoch died. We're going to see it in plainer language in a moment.
In the 8th verse of that chapter, it's sort of very clear too. You'll see me no longer, you'll look for me, I'll be no more. So he goes down to the grave does not return.
Yes, thanks for that, Evelyn. In case you didn't catch that, earlier on in that chapter, so chapter 7, verse 8, this is still Job talking. He says more or less the same thing, doesn't he? In different language, but the same sentiment. The eye that now sees me will see me no longer. You will look for me, but I will be no more. As a cloud vanishes and is gone, so he who goes down to the grave. So he's not talking about just disappearing into thin air, is he? But he's talking specifically about death. Who goes down to the grave does not return. He will never come to his house again. His place will know him no more. Thanks for that, Evelyn. That was very good. Let's go to the next book now. It's Psalms 37. I'm suggesting that this phrase no more means is equating with the fact that he died. Psalms 37. This is one of David's psalms. And towards the end of this psalm, I think we should read... Well, let's pick out the verses first and then we'll get a bit of context in a moment. Let's go to verse 35. We'll read a couple of verses here. David here... Some of the psalms are very interesting, aren't they? Well, you know that because Athel did an excellent series on them earlier. And one of this type of psalm is one where David is... He's almost having a bit of a complaint out loud, in a sense. But he knows, he sees how wicked people flourish, and yet good people die. And it's an injustice, and you see that in Solomon's writings too, in the later books. But we get something like that here too. Verse 35, David says, I have seen a wicked and ruthless man flourishing like a green tree in its native soil, but he soon passed away and was no more. Though I looked for him, he could not be found. And that's echoed in this next verse. Consider the blameless. Observe the upright. There is a future for the man of peace. But all sinners will be destroyed. The future of the wicked will be cut off. So he's contrasting their life with death, isn't he? Let's go back and just have a look at verse 34. And we'll just read some of the verses around that. David says, wait for the Lord and keep his way. He will exalt you to inherit the land. Now, of course, there's dispensational aspects to this, aren't there? When the wicked are cut off, you will see it. And then he says, well, we'll just read it again. I have seen a wicked and ruthless man flourishing like a green tree in its native soil, but he soon passed away and was no more. Though I looked for him, he could not be found. And that's what people did with Enoch too, I'd imagine. And what they did, certainly what they did with Elijah. You remember Elijah disappeared and then some of Elisha's friends said, oh, we can go and look for him. And they went and looked, but he couldn't be found there. But he wasn't found for a different reason, was he? Consider the blameless, observe the upright. There is a future for the man of peace, but all sinners will be destroyed. The future of the wicked will be cut off. And he talks about the salvation of righteousness comes from the Lord. I think we've got time to look at one more passage that uses this phrase no more, and it's in Jeremiah 31. We're looking at these because we read in Genesis 5 that Enoch walked with God, then he was, quote, no more. And I'm suggesting to you that in other places in the scriptures, that no more means death. Jeremiah 31. I certainly don't have all the answers about what happened to Enoch, but I think he died anyway. Jeremiah 31, and we'll look at verse 15. Jeremiah here is writing, this is at the beginning of the exile, where people were being taken out from the land. They were actually removed from Judah in three stages. So we're back in the Old Testament, of course, the Babylonian exile. And Jeremiah is there and here's what he says. He's passing on this message from the Lord. This is what the Lord says. A voice is heard in Ramah, which was not that far from Jerusalem. A voice is heard in Ramah, mourning and great weeping. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because her children are no more. They weren't there, and most of them had been killed, or a lot of them had been killed anyway. And then I suppose you know, of course, that is quoted in the New Testament.
They certainly were no
and they were no more. That's right. Just to fill in the gaps there, is in Matthew 2, we read how Herod killed all the small children because he heard about this one who was, this baby that was born, who was to be, quote, the king of the Jews, and he didn't like this idea. So he had all the male, or he tried to have all the male infants under the age of two killed. And then we read in the narrative, there was great weeping, and we get this quote come up. It's this particular verse. Now, it's a completely different context, but it's still talking about death, isn't it? And the sorrow that came from that. And Enoch was no more, and neither were Rachel's children, and Job thought he would be no more, and David's enemies would be no more. It's a similar theme. I think perhaps the most compelling evidence, though, for Enoch's death, eventual death anyway, is in Hebrews 11. And I'd like you to go there now, please. We know so little about Enoch. We really do. Hebrews 11, what do you think of, first up? Faith. It's the great faith chapter, isn't it? And we get a list of what's often called the heroes of faith. It's not a great term, I don't think, but it, we all know what it's talking about. And I'm going to read from verse 1. Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. So, in a moment, of course, we're going to read about Enoch. So, whatever we read about Enoch is going to be in the context of faith. This isn't just a proof text to prove my point, although I hope it will. Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for, the people of old. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, he still speaks, even though he is dead. And here's our verse, verse 5. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life. Now, I don't particularly like the way that the NIV has translated this. They've been a little loose with the translation. Here it says that Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. I don't think that's true. The original, the King James certainly says that he did not taste death. I can't remember what the New King James says.
See death.
He did not see death. Yes. And this is what makes me think that perhaps Enoch was removed from danger, an immediate danger. But he did die, and we'll see this in a moment. Anyway, let's read the whole lot of the verse. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life, so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. And we've read that phrase a couple of times too about not being found, because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And this is where the faith aspect comes in. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So, whatever Enoch did or didn't do, and whatever happened to him or didn't happen to him, we learn very definitely he was a faithful man, and that he was taken, again, however it was, it happened, it was taken and done because he was faithful. In most instances, particularly in the Old Testament, when someone dies, their life is cut short because they did something stupid or unfaithful. And here's a man who was removed from wherever he was, and because he was faithful. Now, there's a number of suggestions. Well, I'll come back and make a suggestion about that. Let's have a look now at verse 13. Because, well, between verse 5 and verse 13, we read about Noah. We also read about Abraham, and we read about Sarah. And then we read, verse 13, all these people, so that's Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, all these people were still living by faith when they died. Enoch was one of those people. He died. They did not receive the things promised. So if Enoch was taken straight to heaven, to his final rest, well, then that also contradicts what we've just read then. Because it says he didn't get what was promised. He didn't get his hope, if you want to put it that way. And we see that also at the very end of the chapter. We continue to read about a number of people, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, there's a whole list of them. If you go right down to verse 39, we read, these were all, and we can put Enoch in there, these were all commended for their faith. That's why they're mentioned here, right? Yet none of them, none, doesn't say none, oh, by the way, except Enoch, it says none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us, and Paul is talking about the believers at that time, at, you know, first century. God had planned something better for us so that only together with us first century Christians, would they, the Old Testament heroes of faith, be made perfect. And what it's talking about essentially, I think anyway, is the resurrection at Christ's coming. So that, you remember the order in 1 Corinthians 15? Christ the first fruits, then those that are Christ at his coming. And that's what will happen. All those people will find a resurrection into that land at his coming. And I think Enoch will be one of those. And why would Enoch need to be resurrected or anything like that if he was alive in heaven at the moment? He died. I don't know exactly how he died. Don't really know all the circumstances. There is a thought, I'll just put it to you, and I'm not sure I really agree with it, but anyway, is that Enoch was taken away from earth, or no, that's the wrong way to put it. He was taken away from wherever he was to protect him from perhaps some evil around there, that his life wouldn't be contaminated and all that sort of thing. Well, I don't think that quite holds water, because these people in the heroes of faith list are commended because, well, they could have been tempted to go the other way, couldn't they? But they didn't. And I think Enoch was faithful before that happened. But whatever happened to him, I think he died. In fact, I'm fairly sure he died. How he died, where he died, his circumstances, I'm not sure. But he died, and he awaits resurrection, just like the rest of them. What I personally think happened is that Enoch was in danger, and God just said, I'm going to take you out of this. Because verse 13 then goes on to say that all these people died. Here's what I'm saying with certainty. At some point on earth, Enoch died. How exactly he died, when he died, how old he was when he died, I think it was 365 when he died, but there is scope, I suppose you could say, well, maybe he lived a bit longer, but I don't think so. All those other particulars I'm not absolutely certain of, but I'm pretty sure there's enough evidence there in Hebrews 11 that talks about death and him not seeing the promises and then being resurrected with those other believers later on, that he's dead. He's dead now.
And together with John 3.
And together with John 3, no man's ascended into heaven. That's right. But I suppose what I want to do by looking at a passage like this is just say that there is at least one aspect of this very unusual account that is quite consistent with Scripture. And that is that unless the Lord intervenes by his coming, which hasn't happened for most of mankind's time, then people will live and they will die and they will cease to exist, or they will be unconscious or dead in every way until they are resurrected. And I think that is exactly what Hebrews 11 confirms too about Enoch. Well, we're told that he was faithful, and that his faith had something to do with this. So that's perhaps another thing I reckon I'm happy to stand by, a statement I'm happy to stand by. is that his faith had something to do with it.
I wonder if it's if there's some similarity with what happened to Moses. We know that Moses did die because God said, righto, your number's up, Moses, and come. As far as the rest of the people were concerned, they saw Moses go up the mountain. That was the last they saw of him. And if they went looking for his grave, we're told specifically they could not find. God said, I will bury you and nobody's going to know where you are. Because I think Satan was after him too, and after his body for some reason.
Maybe, yes, yes.
I think it says that somewhere.
I'll contended for the body of Moses. That's in, is it in Jude? At this point, I'd be prepared to say that Enoch is not alive, and he's just like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the other people in that list. He's dead. He awaits resurrection. His death seems to have been a little unusual. The circumstances of him dying seem a little unusual, but I think that that's what happened to him. We're going to leave Enoch now. We can talk more about Enoch over a cup of tea. And you'll come up with the answers then, I'm sure. But I'd like you now to turn to Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12. And we're going to consider for a few minutes now Jonah. So you can take your bookmark out of Genesis, if you like. And we'll go to Matthew chapter 12. Just while you're going there, I'm reluctant to bring up passages that I don't have, or don't feel confident, I suppose, in all the solutions and all the problems that they bring up. But I think in your Bible study, in your reading, if I can make one suggestion that's helped me very much in my Bible study and reading, is that you establish what are the facts first, and then everything else has to fit in with that. If you've got a fact, something you can establish, it's like, well, that's pretty immovable. I don't think we can play around with that concept or what that thought. That's right. Then everything else is subject to that. And for me, the point of that story is that Enoch died. I'm pretty confident of that. Because I've read it in a number of different ways. We looked at it in the Old Testament, that phrase no more kept on coming up in the context of death. We read in Hebrews 11, Enoch died, or he didn't receive the promises, all that sort of thing. So to me, that's something that despite all the other unusual circumstances, that to me is immovable. And if I can suggest to you, maybe that's what we should be doing too in our study of these things. All right, let's have a look at Jonah. Again, I'm going to throw some different ideas at you and you can see what you make of them. We're in Matthew chapter 12 here, and we're going to read verse 38 onwards. This is the Lord's ministry, of course, his earthly ministry, and it says, "Then some of the Pharisees and teachers of the law said to him, 'Teacher, we want to see a miraculous sign from you.'" And of course, this is preceding this is about three or four chapters of miraculous signs, which they were quite welcome to have a look at and observe at any time, but they still came up to him and said, "We want to see a miraculous sign from him," as if he was just a magician or a novelty act. Not quite the right attitude. Anyway, he answers, verse 39, he answered, "A wicked and adulterous generation asks for a miraculous sign, but none will be given it except the sign of the prophet Jonah." And what's the prophet Jonah sign? Well, "For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of a huge fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth." The men of Nineveh, little context here, Jonah, of course, was told to go to Nineveh, and eventually, after he had his ordeal with the fish, he went to Nineveh, which was an enemy city. He preached to them about how they should repent, otherwise the Lord would have some serious dealings with them, and they did repent. And so that's why we read in verse 41, "The men of Nineveh will stand up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and now one greater than Jonah is here." there's a parallel example here about the Queen of the South. I think that's the Queen of Sheba, but anyway. "We'll rise at the judgment with this generation, condemn it. She came from the ends of the earth to listen to Solomon's wisdom, and now one greater than Solomon is here." And it's the argument goes on. But that verse 40 talks about, verse 39, beg your pardon, about the sign of the prophet Jonah. And then it talks about how he was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights, and the Son of Man, so the Lord Jesus Christ, would be in the tomb 3 days and three nights. And of course he died. And what I'm going to suggest to you too is that perhaps Jonah died too. And let's go back to Jonah in the Minor Prophets there and have a look at what happened. Jonah's the fifth of the 12 Minor Prophets, if that's any help to you finding it. How many months of the year are there? There's 12. How many Minor Prophets are there?
12.
We all know the months of the year. We're Bible students. Why don't you make it your point this week, if you don't know those 12 Minor Prophets, put a list of them on the toilet door and see if you can learn 12 Minor Prophets by next week. Here's your challenge. It's not that hard. What we're going to do here is just skip through chapter 1. I hope you know something of this story. Jonah was an Old Testament prophet. He was based in Jerusalem, and he was told by the Lord, well, we read in verse 1 of chapter 1, "The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, go to the great city of Nineveh," which was the capital of the Assyrian Empire, which was later to cause a lot of problems for Judah and Israel. He says, "Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me." And if you can imagine, I haven't got a map here, but here's Jerusalem, and Nineveh's over here, way over to the east. And what did he do? Well, he went down this way. He went this way. He went towards the sea, and he went to go that way. He went to go west instead of east. And that's what he did. They were the enemy. He didn't really want to preach to the enemy. That's correct. Didn't want the enemy to be blessed. Yes, he was patriotic. These are all interesting points, but for the moment I want to concentrate on that sign of the son of Jonah. Sign of the prophet Jonah. You know that then he ended up in a boat, and the boat, that there was a great storm, and one thing led to another, and everybody figured out that Jonah's disobedience was the cause of this storm. And so what happens here? Well, in verse 15, we find that the sailors, they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. But the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. And what I want to suggest to you here as we read through Jonah's prayer is that this prayer is not, "Lord, please get me out of this fish." His prayer is a prayer of thanksgiving for having been made alive and his life preserved. And all that took place while he was inside the fish's belly. Let's read it. I'll make a few suggestions as we go along. And, you can draw your own conclusions from there. Chapter 2, verse 1. "From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. He said, 'In my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From the depths of the grave, I called for help, and you listened to my cry.'" Incidentally, I think if you're reading a King James, I think that says, "From the belly of hell. From the belly of hell I cried, and you listened to my cry." Verse 3, "You hurled me into the deep, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, 'I have been banished from your sight. Yet I will look again toward your holy temple.' The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever." But you brought my life up from the pit, O Lord my God. So there's nothing about, please get me out of this fish, is there? You brought my life up from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs, but I, with a song of thanksgiving, right? It's not, Lord, get me out of this fish. It is a prayer of thanksgiving. I, with a song of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord. And I think the salvation in this case is not redemption by the blood or anything like that. Quite plainly and simply, the Lord had saved his life. The Lord was his life saver. In a very real, physical, immediate sense. And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. Then we read, then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time. Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim it and do it this time. And he says, all right, I'll go this time. And it's a very interesting story, but let's not get away from our point here. Remember, we looked at Matthew 12 that talked about the sign of the prophet Jonah. Just as Jonah was in the belly of the great fish 3 days and three nights, so the Son of Man will be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. The Son of Man, of course, died. He was, I really have to be careful about how I say this, but I want to emphasize the point. When the Lord died, he was dead. He wasn't partly alive. There wasn't a part of him that, you know, his soul was floating around. He died. We want to look at some of this in a couple of weeks' time too. And I think this is what happened to Jonah. I do? I'm going to suggest a bit of a chronology here. Verse 15, firstly, the sailors threw Jonah into the sea. We're in chapter 1. So here's the order of what I think took place. They took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. Okay, so the sailors threw Jonah into the sea. That's the first thing that happened. No problems there? They knew that this would probably mean his death. Go back and have a look in verse 14. This is the sailors. They say, then they cried to the Lord, O Lord, please do not let us die for taking this man's life. They knew that he was a prophet of the Lord, prophet of Jehovah. And they're saying to Jehovah, well, please don't let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man. They knew what throwing him overboard would do to him. So they threw him into the sea. They knew that that would probably mean his death. And indeed, I think the next thing that happened was that Jonah did indeed begin to drown and lose consciousness. Verse 7. Says, when my life was ebbing away, and it talks about at the end of verse 5, the engulfing waters threatened me, the deeps surrounded me, seaweed was wrapped around my head, I was a goner. That's what he's saying. But continuing on in verse 7, when my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord. And I think this is the next thing that happened, that as he was dying, as he was drowning and being engulfed by the waters and the seaweed and everything, he had the common sense, or good sense, I should say, to pray to the Lord. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. So they threw him in the sea. He began to drown. As he was drowning, he prayed. The next thing that happened was that the fish swallowed him. Now we've got to go back in the narrative for that, verse 17 of the previous chapter. Well, you all know the story anyway. The Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. And sometime there, perhaps before the fish got to him, or perhaps inside the fish, I think Jonah died. And that's where he stayed for 3 days and three nights. At some point after that, so he's still in the fish, at some point later, the Lord brought Jonah to life again in the belly of the fish. Have a look at verse 6. It says, to the roots of the mountains I sank down. This is difficult language, even in the Hebrew particularly, to unravel this verse. But you get the idea, is basically at the bottom of the sea, at the worst part that he could, worst place he could be. To the roots of the mountains I sank down, the earth beneath barred me in forever. But you brought my life up from the pit. He's thanking God for saving his life. Thanking him for saving his life. And here, what we read in chapter 2, verses 1 to 9, is this prayer of thanksgiving. This is the prayer of thanksgiving. And then finally, that we read in verse 10, chapter 2, verse 10, the Lord commanded the fish and it vomited Jonah onto the dry land. So, basically, in order, I think this is what happened. Jonah was thrown into the sea. He began to drown. As he was drowning, he prayed. Then he was swallowed by the fish, and at some point there, he died, and he was in the fish 3 days and three nights. I think he was made alive in the fish. And then he prayed this prayer of thanksgiving. And then the fish spewed him up onto the dry land and he went about his ministry. I'd like to read that chapter 2 again and you see if that makes some sense to. From inside the fish, let's go from chapter 1, verse 17. The Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. He said, "In my distress I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From the depths of the grave I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the deep, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, 'I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple.' The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever." I think David, he's talking about this is as good as dead here.
He's but lying on the bottom of the ocean, isn't he?
Quite possibly, yep. "But you brought my life up from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs, but I, with a song of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord." And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. And that, I think, to me, lends even more weight to what the Lord said when he said, the sign of the prophet Jonah. Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. And the Lord was in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. I think that's pretty well all I want to say about that. Any questions or comments?
It's not a very good illustration, is it, to say, "I'm going to be dead for 3 days."
This is from the Lord, you mean? Mm.
But he meant dead.
He certainly did mean dead, yes.
And to use an illustration and say, well, Jonah, you know, he was in the belly of the whale, just the same as Freddy was in the cave for 3 days, or someone else was on that top of Mount Everest for 3 days and couldn't move. It's not much.
Or that Elijah was in a cave, or he could have used that example, or David was hiding in a cave for a few days. Yes, he didn't use those examples.
To illustrate his death by using someone that wasn't dead. Right. Really.
If Jonah wasn't dead, then the Lord wasn't dead. I was just going to say that the point of the sign wasn't just to related to the 3 days and three nights. It was, as you're saying, that he would die, be in the grave for 3 days, three nights, and then...
And then rise. Come again, yes, that's right. I think I originally put some of these thoughts together a long, long time ago because I was reading the King James Version, which says in Jonah 2 that out of the belly of hell cried I. I think I made that point as we read through. And of course, the point there is that, well, Jonah didn't go to a burning hell and then was rescued or pulled out, you know, as a spirit or anything like that. No, I think he died, and as Bethel pointed out, of course, he came to life again, and this is the picture, or that completes the picture that the Lord uses in the Gospels. Look, there's questions about this passage as well as the passage that we read about Enoch, but again, I think if we take the principles that we know and we've established a number of times, we look at these perhaps more difficult to understand and difficult to fathom passages, then I think we're in a better place to maybe sort out what's happening, or at least make some good conclusions and not be too speculative or too far off the track, I think.